It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me on Twitter, at JT Gatlin. And of course, our show is also on Twitter, at Locked On Rockets. And if you appreciate what we do here at Locked On Rockets, especially during this hiatus, this lack of NBA content, please do me a favor, subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts, please do me a favor, subscribe to us, drop us a review, leave us some stars. I would sincerely appreciate it. So today's episode is going to be a little unique in the fact that I'm going to do, and this is common in radio, and this is something that I've, you know, considered doing before, and I've finally gotten to the point where I think there's enough good content backlogged on the Locked On Rockets channel that I wanted to be able to do this. So I'm going to do a best of episode today. So basically, I picked out three different segments that I thought were either really informative or entertaining or just had some value. And I want to run those back because I think there is value in going back and kind of either rehashing, you know, old arguments or old debates and kind of seeing where things lie now. Or just, you know, if it's good conversation between me and another host or another guest, I should say, then, you know, that's entertaining in its own right, at least I think so. And obviously, if they've been doing it in radio for years, it works. So, and I think the reason behind doing it rather than just saying, hey, go back and play this other podcast is it kind of, you know, it's picking the best segments out of those shows rather than rehashing or replaying the entire show. It's just, you know, the best 7 to 10 minutes out of, you know, a specific podcast. So today we're going to revisit with Ali Kambijani at The Athletic. We'll revisit with Adam Clanton and his thoughts on the team just after the All-Star break had concluded. And we'll also chat with Ben DuBose and kind of have his thoughts back here on the pod because we answered some really good questions when he and I did the mailbag the last time that he was on the podcast. And I think there's a wealth of information there about the team that I want to kind of get back out into the open and get everybody discussing again, hopefully. So with that, we'll jump straight into the audio without any further delay, and we'll start with Ali Kambijani of The Athletic. So, Ali Khan, basically, you know, out of all these Rockets plays that we see run, you know, on a nightly basis, game by game, which one would you deem your personal favorite?
Oh, man. I've had a lot of new followers this season, and I haven't really tweeted about it much just because of how teams are defending James Harden. But if you've been following me for a while, the easy question for me is 21 series. And if you're one of those people who's a beginner or novice in terminology, I hope I can explain it well enough on radio or on podcast and you guys can understand it. And when you watch the game next, you'll be able to see these plays. But essentially, it's when you have a point guard and a shooting guard on the same side of the court, and they're involved in the same action. And then there's like a wing or a big there, and all three of them are kind of doing a pick and roll or pick and pop or something like that. And there's just so many different options. There's so many different. It's so versatile because it forces the defense to react. But the Rockets have kind of deviated from that a lot this season because if you, especially when Clint was playing, because if you're gonna run pick and roll for James, that just makes it so much easier for a team to double team him. That's kind of the biggest reason why they went five out was because now, if you go and you spread the floor, if you're going to double-team James, you know, there's a pick-and-pop guy open for a three. You really can't do that anymore. There's no Clint Capella in the dunker spot or by the basket where it's an easy rotation. There's no more easy rotations, and it's an extra few steps for a perimeter defender to come rotate over from the help side, and it creates so much miscommunication, so many mistakes for your team. And so to answer your question, the way the Rockets are playing right now, yes, there's sets and there are a lot of different things they're doing, But a lot of it's more so read and react. It's a lot about finding the mismatch. You have Russell Westbrook and James Harden, two of the best isolation players to ever play the game. For the way Russ is playing right now with all that space, like, I think I can make that statement. And when you provide them with that space to kind of get by their matchup one-on-one, it's really hard for you to do anything. So teams are, if you tried as a team to throw a double team, this makes it much more difficult because who are you going to help off of? You have three other shooters on the court if Russell Westbrook has the ball or James Harden has the ball. So it's just really interesting to see how teams are reacting and what they can do now that Clint Capella was traded.
You know, and so you mentioned, you know, James Harden and Russell Westbrook being great in isolation, which is absolutely true. But there's this kind of, you know, notion that Mike D'Antoni doesn't run plays, doesn't run an offense, which is absolutely far from the truth. So kind of keeping in line with, you know, the plays and whatnot, are there any plays that have, you know, maybe been retired now that Clint Capella isn't with the team, or possibly any new wrinkles or variations with the additions of guys like Robert Covington, Damari Carroll, Jeff Green, or, you know, just because they're going small now, are there new wrinkles and, you know, new versions of these plays that are, you know, being used?
I think the biggest thing from the Rockets going small, and especially with the addition of Jeff Green, is when Jeff Green's running the offense with Russell Westbrook in that second unit, a lot of plays the Rockets run, there's a lot of different packages the Rockets have. And if you are a Rockets fan and you want to learn more about the game, highly recommend YouTubing these plays and like typing the word I'm going to say with Rockets, because I guarantee there's going to be a whole YouTube compilation of this. So I'll just list some of them out for you if you're a fan to kind of check these out. One of them is Spain. So if you look up Spain pick and roll and Rockets on YouTube, you'll find videos of that, and you'll be able to kind of see what I'm talking about. That's a play the Rockets love to run for Eric Gordon. It's with him setting a back screen for the rim roller, and then he pops out to the perimeter, and it kind of just messes up switches and all these things like that. So that's a play the Rockets are going to run a lot more when Eric comes back. You have a play called Delay. It's very similar to 21 series. So if you go on YouTube again, you type in Delay and Rockets, you'll see these plays that I'm talking about. It'll make a lot more sense visually. I think those two plays are two staples of what the Rockets are doing, especially Delay. It's just because it creates opportunities for wings who are setting these screens now to be able to slip and create more miscommunication. I really want to highlight Daniel House. I think Daniel House has been, since they made this switch and since he's been starting, he's been phenomenal, not just as a shooter, but I think as a screener. If you watch the game, and I think a lot of the fans who are listening to this, their next game, they're going to watch it on Saturday against the Boston Celtics. When you watch that game, pay attention to Daniel House when James Harden and Russell Westbrook have the ball. Look who's screening for James and Russ early in the shot clock. Look who's screening for them in different actions. It's usually Daniel House. He's been doing a great job of kind of setting his feet or slipping or kind of, you know, being in position, especially where James wants him to be. And I think that that's been such a key for this offense because, yes, they run plays like you talked about, but these plays are generally set up to create matchup advantages for James and Russ. And when they're trying to attack the weakest defender on the opposing team, having a guy like Daniel House who can set screens and who's definitely come a long way from doing that compared to last season, it's such a big weapon for your team.
All right. And kind of to wrap up this segment, who do you view on this Rockets team as the biggest X factor right now?
P.J. Tucker. I would say, if you asked me this before the trade deadline, I would say Clint Capella. I really do think Clint Capella is that good of a player, and I definitely do think the Rockets will miss him in some different matchups against playoff teams. But the small ball lineup does not work without P.J. Tucker. I know everybody listening to this knows this, but he is the ultimate glue guy for this team. He's the key defensive player. He's the guy who, you know, fixes all the rotations when there's mistakes. He's the guy who knocks down that corner three at a high rate. He's the guy who knows exactly where he needs to be, where his teammates needs to be. He's one of the vocal leaders on the team. And this small ball lineup is all predicated on him being the five. And if he's so important to what they do, especially on switches, because he can play the five, quote-unquote, even though the Rockets don't really like to use positions, he can play the five, but still be matched up on the best perimeter player for the opposing team. And when you can do that, you're going to switch everything like the Rockets do. There's no doubt in my mind that P.J. Tucker is the X factor for the Rockets.
So that wraps segment one of our Best Of podcast. So coming up, we will have Rockets Wire editor Ben DuBose for segment two. But before we get there, a quick word from our friends over at Blinkist. All right, guys, let me tell you about one of the most useful apps on my phone. So it's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn when you don't have free time. And, you know, that means you can't work on personal development. And there's actually an app that kind of solves that problem. And I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. So Blinkist is pretty unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need to know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and actually condenses it down into just 15 minutes that you can read or even listen to. You know, successful people like business leaders are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you and me who want to get to the main points of a book quickly so that you can start using that information right away. With its audio feature, Blinkist actually makes it easy to finish a book during your morning commute, your lunch break, or even while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive growing library, different categories from self-help to business to just health, history books. You name it, they've probably got it. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestsellers lists, as well as classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had the time to. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to this massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. You can go to Blinkist.com/MBA to try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off of your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/MBA to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/MBA. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, chatting with Rockets Wire editor Ben DuBose. All right, Ben, so we've got our very next question. So at Calvin Marcus, so your pal Cal, which is an awesome Twitter name, I should say, asks, will Damari Carroll crack the rotation when Westbrook returns? Or I guess this was immediately after a game that Westbrook sat out. But when he returns, why or why not? And do you see him playing important minutes in the playoffs?
Potentially. I think that Carroll's role is more of a hedge on McLemore and House. We talked a little bit about McLemore earlier. Can he continue to shoot this well? If he doesn't, he's a bit of a decline on the defensive end. With House, it's more of a bigger picture going back to last offseason question with regards to, you know, I know he's been in rhythm for the last month or so, but think back to early January. There's a reason why House got pulled from the starting lineup, and it's reminiscent a little bit of what happened in the playoffs against the Warriors. I know he had the toe situation, but he's still relatively young and unseasoned. And so I think what Carroll does, he provides you a hedge a little bit on McLemore and House. So some of it is to be determined based on exactly how those other two guys fare. In terms of what Carroll can do, I think he's looked pretty good. You know, he got in the Knicks game because, as the question mentioned, Westbrook's injury, that was a big part of it. So I'm understanding that when Westbrook comes back, in theory, that absorbs some of those minutes. But Carroll, he's looked pretty spry to me in terms of his defensive ability to move laterally. He showed against the Knicks a nice ability, I thought, to attack the bucket in a couple of instances. I've been pretty impressed with Damari with the limited sample we've seen. Also, that first game against the Warriors in which he literally just got signed like 90 minutes before the game. I think Damari has potential. I just don't know that shooting-wise, he has quite the upside of Ben McLemore or the athleticism of Daniel House. So I think in a perfect world, he might be insurance depth in the playoffs, because I think when House is clicking, he can be really, really good. And if Ben McLemore shoots the way he has the last 6 weeks, I think they have higher upside than Damari Carroll. And then, of course, at the center spot, I'm assuming that's between Tucker, occasional Covington, and then Jeff Green, as we've talked about. I think that's kind of your minutes at the five. So I think Carroll, in a perfect world, if everyone is clicking, he might not have the upside as your other guys. But in a more practical sense, could I see him in the rotation by the playoffs? Yes, absolutely. Just because I think in both cases, Ben McLemore and Daniel House Jr., there's some uncertainty with regards to their playoff history and how much you can truly expect to translate once you get to best of seven series against the best teams in the NBA.
You know, it's a good thing we mentioned that you mentioned just now, PJ Tucker at the center spot for the Rockets, because our very next question actually involves PJ Tucker. So at J White Stripes, so Johnson White, will the Rockets look to extend PJ? I feel like this is a pretty self-explanatory question, but I think it just depends on kind of the monetary value of the contract that Tucker's looking for, right?
Yeah, the contract and how he plays in the playoffs. To me, that's by far the biggest thing to watch for, because with PJ, it's not so much that they don't want to reward him. It's just very difficult for a guy who's going to turn 35 years old in a couple of months to believe, based on traditional NBA aging curves, that he's going to be worth extending. And keep in mind, when his current deal runs out next summer, he's going to be 36. Now, to be fair to PJ, he keeps himself in phenomenal shape. He has already defied the traditional aging curve to a large extent, because most guys aren't as good, especially defensively, as PJ is right now at 34, about to turn 35. So who's to say that he can't keep doing this? We have seen some players be the exception to the rule. That said, the rule is there for a reason. And so I think what Daryl Morey said last summer was that, with rare exceptions like James Harden, their mentality in terms of the Rockets front office, they wait until a year out to where it makes sense for both sides in terms of what the player and his agent think is fair value for them and what the team sees as fair value, aka what they are willing to commit to. And I think last summer, having a guy who's 34 years old and 2 years, two seasons out, it's too tough to project his value. If PJ Tucker, we've seen what he's done this regular season, he's been really good. If he holds up in the postseason as well, and you're only 1 year as opposed to two, then yeah, I could see the Rockets being willing to take the gamble. So to me, it's a combination of things. First off, the dollar value has to be there. But then beyond that, from the Rockets' standpoint, they want to see how he holds up in the playoffs. To this point, so far, so good. But if there's any sort of kind of hint at maybe PJ is aging a little bit by the playoffs, then that decreases the odds of a deal. Because the main obstacle is just, from the Rockets' standpoint, they want to make sure that, hey, if we're giving an extension to a guy who's going to be 36 years old when he gets that extension, most NBA players are not very good at that point. So we want to be as convinced as we can that this guy is still going to be a really good NBA player. And I think the NBA playoffs are where we'll learn a lot when we see PJ against really the best of the best when it comes to big men in the Western Conference.
So keeping things in line with a lot of the playoff related questions, which there are a lot of playoff related questions, and obviously we're headed into that stretch of the season where we are pretty much concerned with, you know, seeding, how they're going to fare against the other playoff teams. But at y'all are giving me some really difficult Twitter handles to pronounce. All right, at Amujika24, and then, yeah, so there we go. How will the spacing be different in the playoffs? According to the national media, opposing teams will minimize it, but honestly, how? And this kind of reminds me of, in a way, how the Raptors essentially shrunk the court against Giannis in last year's playoffs. And so that might be obviously Giannis is a different beast than the Rockets spacing, but there are ways to kind of shrink a court and to make things more difficult for a team that relies on shooting as many threes as the Rockets do. We've seen them be run off the three-point line before, right?
This would have been a much better question when the Rockets had Clint Capela, or when they were playing Nene as the backup, as they were even a year ago, and he was a bit of the hedge if you worried that Clint was too unseasoned in a given matchup. Right now, I'm not really sure what the answer is, unless the Rockets just go catastrophically 0-for-27 cold. I hate to bring that up, but we do have to acknowledge it as a possibility. That's when you go that three-point heavy, you do have variance with good and bad. But to me, when you have truly five out, and I know Russell Westbrook isn't really a three-point shooter, although, by the way, Russell has shot low to mid-30s the last couple of weeks. It's a small thing, but he was a lot better after the All-Star break last year in Oklahoma City as he got into rhythm after offseason knee surgery. Maybe that same thing is happening again. That would mean a whole heck of a lot if you can't sag off Russ, if he can just shoot, not even saying he needs to shoot great, just low to mid-30s, something to be respectable. But even if he's the guy that he's been most of this year, around 25%, he's so lethal attacking the bucket, especially if you have to respect the center all the way out to the three-point line. So to me, it's just finding the right balance. To me, if the Rockets can find that, but that's the question. You know, we talked earlier about McLemore, House, Carroll, who's in rhythm, and trying to find the right balance between making enough threes on offense and having the right defense and physicality on the other end. It's finding that balance. If you don't, then sure, there's some scenarios that you can kind of compress the court. But otherwise, assuming you find that right balance with your role players, it's just going to be pretty difficult, because it's not like the Rockets with Clint Capela were then you have at least one spot that you can clearly sag off. And we've seen, even if you do sag off Russell Westbrook entirely, he is so uniquely lightning quick with his ability to drive. Even with Rudy Gobert sagging off at 7'1", he's still able to score 30-plus mid-30s a game with his attacking mindset. So it's not like just because Russell Westbrook's a non-shooter, no, that's not the same as, say, Clint Capella, a non-shooter. Not even close, because Russell Westbrook can create. So to me, I think the analysts are way oversimplifying it because they don't recognize or appreciate the uniqueness in a good way of what the Rockets are doing. To me, it's just a question of finding the right balance in the role players, because if you optimize things correctly, certainly Ben McLemore could be an asset on that end. It's going to be pretty impossible to shut down the spacing, but then it gets into, you know, how much with your role players can you get offensively while not being a downside defensively, and can you find the right balance there? To me, that's the big question.
I definitely don't envy Mike D'Antoni, who gets paid the big bucks to make these decisions and to try and find the balance in his rotations, but keeping things going, our next question comes from @Chris_Davis. So, which team out of the Thunder, Mavericks, or Pelicans would you want to avoid in the first round? And I like Chris's question here by just nominating the Pelicans, who are currently three games out of a playoff spot. He's sticking them in the playoff, you know, in the playoff race. I appreciate that, Chris.
To me, there's an easy answer to that, and I appreciate throwing the Pelicans in, because the Grizzlies, it feels like, especially with their injuries, they might be going the other way at the moment. To me, it's easily the Mavs, because we have seen over the course of this season, I know they've tailed off a little bit with the Luka injury over the past month, but when they're right, the Mavs have been a historically elite offense. Luka can be a true difference maker. If they get hot from the perimeter, there's just not a whole heck of a lot that you can do about it, even if you're a really good team. So they scare me if they're in the 6-7 spot, something like that. I don't want the Mavs. And also, selfishly, there's the Houston-Dallas rivalry. If you lose to Dallas with Luka at 20 and Russell Westbrook and James Harden in their 30s, you will never hear the end of it. And there is no case, if you lose to Luka at 20 and with your guys in their 30s, to how things are going to get better. That would be an awful narrative. So I don't want to chance it. I also think they have a lot of upside against anyone if they're healthy. So I'd rather just not go against the Mavericks. To me, I respect so much what they've done, but I honestly wouldn't mind playing the Thunder. I know there's a lot of Rockets fans, and I respect so much what Chris Paul has done. I know it'd be awful if Russell Westbrook lost to the Thunder, if Chris Paul beat the Rockets, yada, yada. To me, the Thunder are a great regular season team. They play with focus every single night. They do a lot of little things, but I don't really see the upside in the playoffs in terms of difference makers that can take over an individual game. To me, they're a little bit simplified. They don't have the extra gear that the Mavs do. The Pelicans, I honestly have no idea. The sample size with Zion is so small. It's tough to read them. I can pick up that discussion in a couple of weeks when we see if their recent surge continues, if they really get into the mix, because they still have three games to make up on Memphis. But to me, Dallas is the scariest. Oklahoma City, I don't want that to sound like a slight. I respect them, but they're just not in the same gear when it comes to upside as opposed to Dallas. Say what you will, but for long stretches of this season, this has been one of the best offenses in NBA history. And ideally, I prefer to avoid that in round one, especially adding the rivalry aspect to that as well.
Can you imagine the sparks between, I know we've talked about a Clippers Rockets playoff series, but imagine the sparks in a Rockets Thunder playoff first round series.
Oh yeah. Jeez, the storyline to be off the charts.
Segment two in the books for our best of episode. So coming up, we will round things out with Sports Talk 790's Adam Clanton. So you guys don't go anywhere. And we are back in here for our final segment at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chatting with Sports Talk 790's Adam Clanton. He is also a member of the Rockets Radio Network, so you can hear him on the radio for every other game, basically.
Yeah, me and Wex split duties this year, which it hasn't been too bad. I've been able to spend a little bit more time with the new little guy. So,
how is the little guy doing?
He's a maniac. He's 16
so he's
months
like
old. Yeah, but he's unusually strong. Like, his mom bought him like this wrought iron basket with like a canvas cloth in it to like put toys in, and he picks it up and like puts it over his head and like walks around the house. And it feels like the scene in like the original Superman where, like, before Christopher Reeve like is the adult version of him when the little pod crashes in the field, mm-hmm. and he's like lifting up the car.
Oh, and he's learning about his superpowers
that's
for the
Carson.
First time.
Yeah, like I want to put a red cape on him and nothing else, because that's what he looked like basically when he got down to Earth, and have him just, you know, because he's great. First child for me, like first, you know, biological child for me. I have a stepdaughter who's 13, so there's this big gap, but she's kind of like, you know, inherited like the role of like big sister. Like she loves it, and she's almost like the third adult in the house. Well, the second one, because me and Carson are the two kids.
I was about to say you might be giving yourself a little bit too much credit there. No,
yeah, long-winded answer of saying he's great.
All right, so as we kind of head into this second half of the season, you've got yourself now, you know, and at times, you know, before he joined the Rockets, an avid Westbrook hater.
Oh yeah,
you know, Rockets
didn't delete a tweet, man. Didn't delete a tweet.
No, neither did I. You know, a lot of people, the receipts are out there. You know, the concerns were valid, and they are still valid, even though he is now wearing a Rockets jersey, has done so for not 54 games. He played 45 games as a Rocket. What are your general opinions of Westbrook now that he's played 45 games in a Houston jersey?
First word that comes, like, if you wanted to do word association, credit. And here's why. I'm not going to say everything he did that drove me crazy when he was not wearing red, he's completely eliminated. But one major thing he has, this guy does not shoot three-point shots hardly at all. He was jacking them up with reckless abandon in the first 20 to 25 games. He was coming off of knee surgery. He didn't have his wind, as I think we all can see now. I mean, the guy...
Yeah, hindsight's always 20/20.
I mean, he is... If Russell Westbrook isn't the guy that is your prototypical, stereotypical, this guy is going to be awful when his athleticism evades him, I don't know who is. But it hasn't yet. And this guy has had knee surgeries. I feel like I should be knocking on some wood. Best downhill player in the NBA. I mean, given his size relative to big men. I mean, Giannis, you can say that. But Giannis, you know, he bowling ball pins guys out of the way. Doesn't get called for the foul. He does basically what Shaq used to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Best downhill player in the NBA. When he's under control at being downhill, it's even scarier. Because how many points has he left literally at the rim?
Oh, he misses a lot of layups. Bunnies.
Because he's going too fast.
He is the dude. I've said it so many times that he goes like 110 at all times. And if he were to just dial it back to like 95, he'd still be faster than 99% of the league. And he'd probably make a few more of those layups.
I don't think, kind of like the step back three with Harden, don't go to like a park or a YMCA or wherever. Go onto an NBA floor sometime if you ever have the chance. And just imagine what it takes to go full speed, wire to wire, 94 feet with the best athletes in the world and make them look silly because you're blowing by all of them and then still have the ability to finish when you get to the other end. That's what he's doing. That's why they traded Clint Capella. They wanted him to be able to do that with reckless abandon and not have anybody clog up the middle. Is there other aspects to that deal? Of course. I think we all know what they could or could not be. I'm not going to get into all that because it's just, I don't think it matters, because the Rockets can win this way. And I didn't know that I could say that before, but having seen it before they made the deal, having seen them bring in Robert Covington, having seen them, I think, get a sneaky signing in Damari Carroll, and to a lesser extent, Jeff Gray's a 10-day, and I don't know if he'll stick.
They've got 5 games to check it out and see if they
like it. Right, right. I mean, but Damari Carroll's not bad. Like,
good veteran presence, yeah.
He's 1 year removed, 1 or 2 years removed from his highest point per game average, and essentially was just rotting on the Spurs bench because, I don't know. I mean,
because Popovich hates three-pointers.
Right, because Popovich essentially has watched the NBA game pass him by, and now that he doesn't have Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili in their primes to bail out that thinking or basically allow him to be stubborn, here he is. He doesn't look like the great. Now, I mean, nobody's questioning his credentials, but he really has looked stubborn. And I love the fact that Damari Carroll was, A, able to be given that opportunity, and B, how many of these buyout guys have said thanks but no thanks to the Rockets in the last couple of years.
It's nice to finally get a break.
Right. Like, yeah. And look, he's not... First of all, it's buyout market, so you're already you're kind of looking at it with the scrap heap
the dregs
lens
of the NBA.
Right, yeah. But you doubt Daryl Morey to be able to find. I mean, look at Ben McLemore's career. It was dead on arrival when he got here. He is a functional NBA player with a pulse now. And because why? He played for the Rockets.
It's the system. Mike D'Antoni's system allows players to be the best versions of themselves.
And offensively.
So offensively. And well, hey, you know what? And honestly, with this, with the switching scheme that is still very much in place, even though Jeff Bezelic is no longer part of the organization, you know, Elston Turner has inherited that same scheme and has, you know, they're amplifying it now with the with going all in on the small ball lineup. So, you know,
PJ Tucker might die.
He might, you know.
But it'll be fun watching it happen.
Right? No, PJ, you know, I've thrown around the gif from, what was it? The gif from Rocky. I can't remember the dude's name. You know, if he dies, he dies.
Ivan Drago?
Yeah, there we go. You know, I've thrown Rocky that gif around more times than I can count now since PJ Tucker's been nominated to be the starting center in the small ball lineup. But you're right. Damari Carroll, you know, 6'6", decent three-point shot. You know, not shooting the ball well with the Spurs, but, you know, career 36% three-point shooter, almost 39 or 40% from the corners, I believe. So he's a guy that's going to fit into the system perfectly. Now, you know, an interesting thing about this Rockets team under Mike D'Antoni is they have notoriously they've performed really, really well in the second half of seasons. So dating all the way back to MDA's first season here, the 16-17 season, the team went 15-9 the second half of the season. Then in 17-18, they went 21-4.
That's the year they won 65 games.
Yeah. But then last year, which largely last year was viewed as kind of a struggling year for the most part, especially with the, you know, the 11-14 start, they finished the year 20-5 after the All-Star break. So do you think they have another big push in them?
Well, yes and no. I don't want to ride the fence here. It's weird because we're talking about the post Warriors juggernaut world where you don't have, I mean, the funny thing about saying that, though, is that they played the Warriors very well in the regular season most of the time. They would have one doozy where they'd get beaten by like 20. But for the most part, it was a lot of competitive games. And I'm talking about Warriors at full strength, that kind of thing. That team's not there now. And although the Lakers and their fans especially would like to fancy themselves, I think the Lakers have a lot of flaws. I think the Rockets actually might end up being a bad matchup for them now that we've seen them play once. Now, again, time will tell. But I don't think that if they run into the other team from L.A., that they're necessarily going to win that series. So that's just my opinion.
The Lakers or the Rockets?
Talking about if the Lakers ended up playing the Clippers.
Okay.
Clippers, they're loaded. I don't get caught up in, oh, what's wrong with the Clippers? They're cruising through the regular season. They're load managing. They're doing what they need to do to show up in the postseason. Now, you know,
they're doing exactly with Kawhi Leonard what the Rockets are doing with Westbrook. There have been a number of schedule losses this season where you look at like the Pistons loss or that Phoenix Suns loss right after the trade deadline where the Rockets, you know, they come out with, you know, maybe some lackluster energy or whatever. And you know who is Mr. Energy himself? Russell Westbrook.
That's,
you look at some of those losses and it's like it wouldn't have happened if he was playing.
And I mean, you know, the 0 for 27 and all that, we've heard it all. Chris Paul's hamstring. Bottom line is, when the game was on the line, Chris Paul did win you some games in the fourth quarter, but he didn't do it with the type of reckless abandon,
conviction?
Athleticism. Yeah, just ferocity that can, I would say, intimidate a defense that's trying to hold on to a lead, trying to come back in a game, what have you. If you're having to, I mean, listen, I know they end up losing the game on a heartbreaking shot. I have never thought I would see Rudy Gobert get bodied by a guard the way he did the other night.
Oh, it was amazing.
I mean, and Russ is like welcoming it. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about his reckless abandon, his drives to the basket. Guy's fearless. And it's not just a catchy word to attach to it. He's literally does not fear anybody in front of him at the rim. He's going to get to that rim, and he's either going to get the basket or he's going to make you foul him 90% of the time. And that is an element they didn't have with Chris Paul. It's a different element. Chris Paul got you darn near to a champion. They should have won the championship in 2018.
They should have.
I'll never, ever be convinced otherwise. They would have if he hadn't gotten hurt. But I no longer fear late-game situations. But the combination of him doing away with the three-point shot and you know, just basically getting into game-playing shape. He didn't do any physical activity this offseason. People don't realize that. He had knee surgery, and he literally could not put weight on it. So he just didn't, I mean, you can still do some cardio and that kind of thing, but it's not the same as having an off season where he didn't have knee surgery.
And for a guy who relies on his explosiveness, his athleticism so much, you know, not being in the right shape, or the right shape, which obviously for 99% of human beings would be, you know, ideal the way that he came into the season, we'd be like, oh, hell yeah, I look great.
Right.
You know, for him, it's not ideal shape because it doesn't allow him to do what he does best, which now you've said it before, he's played himself into shape. Well, he's at where he needs to be.
And so that brings us to the most important, you know, element of all, James Harden. If James Harden has a night that's not up to par, up to his standards, if he runs into that wall, or if he's just getting double teamed, triple teamed, quadruple teamed at half court, or his shot's just not falling, what have you, I don't think you could look at Chris Paul every single time and say, take over. Like, physically dominate, take over. He could, you know, old man YMCA game kind of take over.
Yeah.
Like that with that mid-range, which he did in game 5.
Yeah.
Right before his hamstring popped.
All reliable.
But if you've got a guy like Russell Westbrook who draws that much attention, there aren't guys that were double-teaming and triple-teaming Chris Paul. That just wasn't happening. He's diminutive. He's a little guy. Russell Westbrook is a physical presence out there. And if things aren't going well for James Harden, and you've opened up the floor the way you have because of the deals you've made, I like I said, I'm not going to sit here and say they're the favorites for the title, or they even it might work, but I definitely, it's going to be must-see television. I'm not going to miss it.
You know, and so kind of just to wrap things up, because we've expressed a lot of thoughts about this so far, about, you know, the Rockets, small ball, their chances, kind of moving into the second half of the season. When Adam and I sat down before the season started back in October, I asked Adam a series of kind of over-under questions. And, you know, so I just want to revisit those really quickly.
Oh, this should
you,
be
Adam.
Good.
And just kind of see, you know, surprisingly did pretty well. So okay. Let's see. So first question I had.
I don't even remember this, by the way.
I asked Rockets 55 wins over or under.
Okay.
So they're currently on pace for 52 wins, and okay. You picked the under on that.
Okay.
So one for you're
not
one
bad
for one so far. Now, next one was Harden. Will he average 36 points per game, over or under? Again, you picked the under, and currently Harden is averaging 35.3 points per game. Now, this one you still have a chance to maybe be wrong on, because
if he goes off again.
If he goes off again, and obviously he had that January really docked his numbers quite a bit. I mean, he had some really subpar games in January.
Did you see that list floating around today on Twitter of the amount of 40-point games of active players in NBA history?
I haven't, no. What
well, number two on the list, I think, is LeBron with 40, maybe 50-something. James has 96. It's stupid.
Oh, my God.
Okay. He's got 96 40-point games. That's insanity to me.
He's
so that's
one
why
of the greatest scorers the game's ever seen.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Even Chuck has to give him props because he has. That's why that one might not hold. He might go back up to, but I don't know if that's a good thing. Maybe that's not good. If you're having to rely on him to do that every night, then what's going on with the rest of the team? Or what's that doing to him for the long term?
That's very true. So maybe it's not the best thing. However, I will note, and I think if I remember properly, I think the Rockets are 17-2 when he scores 40-plus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
and they just lost that game. I think the Utah game, he had 40 in. It was one of those games recently where
the
two...
Then they might be 17-3 then, because I remember okay. The last time I sent out that stat, it was like 17 wins and like two or three losses. So if the Utah game was another one. But either way, things tend to work out well when he goes 40-plus, mm-hmm. at least this season specifically. So we've got our next one. So that one may or may not change, may or may not hold. Our
to
next one, though, Westbrook averaging a triple-double. So we weren't sure on that one, and you picked the under on that one as well. In fact,
he wouldn't.
You said he wouldn't average a triple-double. And in fact, you highlighted the fact, and I went back and looked at this because I re-listened to the podcast and everything. You said that if it was not going to be a triple-double, it was going to be because his assists were way down. And that's exactly what's happened. His assists are hovering about 7.2, 7.3 right now, mm-hmm. somewhere around there. So his assist numbers have dropped a little bit. He's averaging 8 rebounds per game.
Which is... Standard.
Except
for those two seasons where he did, or was it three straight seasons?
He's had three straight seasons where he averaged a triple-double, which is why, but, you know, coming here, having James, who is, you know, a stat monster himself, you know, not necessarily hunting rebounds, which, just to clear up a narrative, Westbrook hasn't hunted rebounds all season.
Not here.
Like, he just, you know, I've watched him let rebounds sail out of bounds when he could have very easily, you know, plucked it out of the air and, you know, maybe risked turning the ball over, stepping on the out-of-bounds line. I don't think he chases stats.
Might go back to what you were talking about with James scoring, where he's not caught up in that narrative, maybe.
He just wants to win.
It's a little bit, both these guys, they're on unfortunately, the wrong side of 30, if you will. They've done it with different variations of both of their teams. And that's what you said right there. I think is right. They both just, they want to win.
Did you read the GQ article that came out?
Okay, so I've seen the photos, and yeah, yet I haven't. But how can you miss them? They're everywhere. And I haven't had a chance to read the article yet. It's, I guess, a couple days ago it came out?
Yeah. In fact, I think it was yesterday, in fact.
I saw a snippet today, but not the whole thing.
Amazing article. Definitely, you know, when you have a chance, sit down, read it. You know, in that article, you know, Westbrook basically, I think it was Westbrook who said, obviously it was one of them, but I think it was Westbrook who said, you know, on an individual level, he and James Harden have achieved almost everything you can, you know, as an NBA player. You know, MVPs, you know, all NBA selections. You know, they've led their team multiple times, you know, as the guy to the playoffs. Now the last thing on their list is to win a championship. And, you know, if they can win a championship, you know, through the power of friendship, you know, that would be one of the coolest storylines in NBA. Like, I would love for those two guys to win a championship just to prove all of the haters wrong, just to shut everybody up. It would be a storybook ending, honestly.
I would be insufferable.
Oh, absolutely. I would expect nothing less.
The thing about that championship under these circumstances in this season, it would be so unexpected. It would be so out of left field, and it would be so what Houston needs considering what's happened with the Astros. You know,
and just the Texans too. You know, we'll lump them in.
Texans. I can't. They were title favorites or in the conversation. They were the only team that ever pushed the Warriors that wasn't in the finals already, you know, coming out of the East with LeBron. Ever. Like, that machine, no one ever touched them in the West. Not even close, except for the Rockets.
The 17-18 team was an all-time great team that went up against an even better all-time great team.
The 17-18 team, if you were to pit it against both title teams, I don't know that they win. I don't know that the title teams win, which is...
saying a lot.
That's saying a lot. But it's a different game, you know? What rules are you playing under?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's always hard to compare eras.
That first team was an all-time defensive. You have Max D-ing up on James. You got
obviously
Hakeem.
Obviously, Olajuwon locking down the paint.
Right. So, I you know, Hakeem would have dominated Clint. But that's how good that team was. So, that's why that one hurt, especially because he just didn't feel like you didn't get a fair shake. You know? I love people say, well, Kevin Durant went down. So you missed your opportunity, as if he didn't have three other Hall of Famers in the lineup still when he went down with that catastrophic injury. I mean, it took literally him, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry getting gassed because all of a sudden he had to actually carry a team for a change to get the Toronto Raptors to win that NBA championship. The Rockets pushed that team largely with James Harden and a less than 100% Chris Paul in his entire tenure, which was all of 2 years here in Houston. Think about that. That's how good James Harden is.
That's how good James Harden is. And I think that's probably a great spot to leave off, you know, just talking, obviously, you know, just appreciating the greatness that is James Harden. But you know the drill, Adam. Where can we find you? You know, go ahead and plug all your stuff.
Twitter at Adam Clanton. I'm usually fighting with someone there. If you do the Instagram thing, it's basically, you know, pics of the kid and or, you know, my infamous good morning videos. I think I had to do an underscore on that one because some guy at Adam Clanton stole it. So it's at Adam underscore Clanton. And occasionally I'm on Facebook, but just mainly Twitter is what I would go at Adam Clanton.
All right. Well, as always, we appreciate you having appreciate having you on here, I should say. Wow. And as always, thank you all so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.